Hi, I'm Daniel Lenzian, host of Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studios. Western New York Soundstage is a podcast that looks to explore Western New York's creative economy through a series of conversations with artists, musicians, producers, directors, and authors from Western New York and beyond. On today's episode, I speak with Mrs. Kasha Davis, drag queen, storyteller, an international celebrity housewife. Mrs. Kasha Davis, based in Rochester, New York, rose to fame on RuPaul's Drag Race, captivating audiences with her witty characterizations and kind heart. Beyond the show, she's a multi-talented performer, touring internationally and collaborating on theatrical productions. Now, she, along with Drag Race alum Darian Lake and Rochester drag royalty Aggie Dune and Ambrosia Salad, we'll be bringing Drag Me to Dinner to Buffalo at Salvatore's Grand Bellamore Ballroom on Saturday, April 13th, 2024 at 6 p.m. Tickets are available at salvatoresexperiences.com. Here is my interview with Mrs. Kasha Davis.
Mrs. Kasha Davis, thank you so much for chatting with me today. How are you?
I'm a delight in some circles. Thank you.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. One of the things I always like to ask artists whenever I interview them on the podcast is there a story from your childhood that connects you to what you do now?
Oh my gosh, that's a great question. Well, the first thing I remember from when I was a little boy, girl, gal, girl, boy, fella, was being enamored with my mother, an Italian diva, putting on pounds and pounds of makeup on a daily basis just to get going for the day. And I remember sitting there with watching her, and she would be just doing her artwork, and I'd be studying her, and I'm like, I want to do that someday. But of course, I wouldn't verbalize that. And then she'd catch me in her padded bra and her a towel on my head, and I'd have some lipstick on, and she'd say, "Oh my Eddie, you're so dramatic." And I just felt solace in the women in my life, my mother and my grandmother. And my grandmother was a vaudeville whistler back in the 1940s and 50s. And boy, could she blow. So we just really, we're just like each other. You know, and honestly, these women I get to emulate and to celebrate as Mrs. Kasha Davis. And it really, truly brings me joy.
That's so beautiful. I mean, it seems like you definitely come from sort of a showbiz family with that vaudeville pedigree. That's wonderful. Was there a performer outside of your family that when you saw them, you said, I need to do that. That is where I need to be.
I love Lucy as a kid and still do. And as a child, I would be like, someday I'm going to be on I Love Lucy, not realizing that it was filmed like 20 years before or whatever, 30 years. And the antics, the glamour, but then also the fact that she would be, you know, getting herself into these goofy, you know, comedic situations. Carol Channing, these Broadway divas, and Judy Garland and Ethel Merman. But then the TV moms. I loved Mrs. C. I loved how she would come in and be like, oh, kids, or Mrs. Garrett on The Facts of Life. Girls, girls, you know. These people, and then Endora and Bewitched. These are the ladies that I have always gravitated towards wanting to be.
I made a reference yesterday in a rehearsal to Gladys Kravitz, and everyone looked at me like, who?
Oh, gosh, right? Good old Gladys Kravitz.
Right. So obviously, Mrs. Kasha Davis is a world famous star, right? But for people who may never have encountered her, and they must be living under a rock, how would you describe her to them?
Well, you're very kind, first of all. And I would say, Mrs. Kasha Davis, an international celebrity housewife because of that one gig in Montreal. And do now say RuPaul's Drag Race and instead of Montreal. And I had the honor of being cast to compete on season 7 and then most recently on All-Stars 8. And I've had the opportunity to participate and then really celebrate the art of drag here in this upstate Rochester, New York area.
You know, one of the words in preparing for this interview that I think came up for me in thinking about you was hardworking. And I think that that's really detailed in the documentary that you participated in a couple of years ago. Can you tell us about that?
Oh my gosh. It's called Workhorse Queen. And Angela Washko, the director, who is a professor at Carnegie Mellon. And I thought when she messaged me on social media, I thought, my goodness, this student wants to do a story. But no, she was a professor. And it became this film that was a love letter to the Rochester area. She asked to do the documentary on me. And I said, you've got to include Aggie and Pandora and Darien Lake and Ambrosia Salad and the wonderful sisterhood that we have here in Rochester. And so it came to be. And I'm so very proud of it. And that particular film helped me to realize the importance of something that's very special in my life. And that is Drag Story Hour and Imagination Station. And this is drag that we do in on Saturday mornings for free at Blackfriars Theater. And it's been something just that's been magical. That film helped me to realize that that was something that I can do to give back with the art of drag.
That's beautiful. You mentioned your drag sisters from Rochester, and Rochester really has been a drag epicenter for a very long time. I think you all must have started at like the age of 7 because it's been at least 25 years, right? So, and that's from Mothers and Club Marcella to now. Why do you think that Western New York really has such a wonderful and flourishing drag scene?
I just believe that there's this theatrical element to it. And what I mean by that is that in any good musical or play, you've got the lead character and supporting roles and the backstage tech and crew. And so we look to each other to, yes, be shady to each other sometimes, like drag can be, but to lift each other up and celebrate each other's individual type and style of performance. We have a wonderful sister, Kiki Velasquez Lord from Buffalo, who performs with us as well. And it's everybody's just a little bit different, and that makes the show so much more interesting. Oftentimes with drag, if someone's successful doing something, others try to emulate that. And then I think that sometimes that becomes a little boring for the audience.
Is there anything you can think about specifically, though, like in Western New York, right? Like, why Rochester? Or do you think it was just sort of that wonderful happenstance?
Well, I think because of the fact that you've got the many months of coldness and winter, and people are, you know, finding ways to be creative and get out. That is one of the things that you'll hear people say. Another thing people say, oh, is there something in the water? It's called Kodak. And the idea there is that certainly it is an artistic community. You know, I grew up in Scranton, Pennsylvania. Think The Office. It was just exactly that. So when I moved to Rochester, New York, it was like a big city. It certainly wasn't New York City, but it was a bigger city. And there was an arts community. There was a strong gay community. And within that community had these legendary drag performers that were expecting everyone to find their own character, find their own personality. And I think that's just extra different than what I've seen in my travels.
How has the art of drag changed since you first started? And what keeps you inspired?
Oh my gosh. When I first started, if you went on stage and you didn't have your fingernails on, or if you were, it was very much the pageant system style of drag where, yes, you can be your own character, but you would never go out without a wig. You would never have a bearded drag queen. And so now I think because of television shows like RuPaul's Drag Race and Dragula and just the mainstream love and exposure of drag, people are stretching those boundaries more. Now, did they do that before? Yes. But the time when I started, it was there were certain expectations that you had to fulfill. And I love to see that. I love to see that all drag is good, and sometimes bad drag is even better.
That's wonderful. You mentioned that you were on RuPaul's Drag Race and RuPaul's Drag Race All Stars. What surprised you most about your Drag Race experience?
Oh, gosh. You know what? I'm a theater person, and I forget that it's a competition. And And a reality competition is, yes, it's very much real, but it is also very much scripted. And it's very much the expectation to really cause drama. Now, have I been involved in drama in my life? Of course I have. Who hasn't? But I gravitate more towards a business type relationship. I gravitate more towards the theater experience. So to me, it was very, just it, for me specifically, surprising how cutthroat it can be.
Mm-hmm. Has your art form changed at all since being on the show?
Well, I think if we're not learning, we're not living, right? So if I look back at old photos, sometimes I'm like, why did you even do, what were you thinking? You know, and then other times you start some new trends and you find new designers. I'll tell you what, I'm no designer. I don't make my own clothes. I'm not Amish and I have good credit. And so I seek out the people who are experts at wig design and costume design. And I hope to showcase their work and I hope they're proud of that. Because if I were to do it myself, well, then it really, I'd really have to simplify things down to just tube dress all the time.
I'm good friends with Dr. Rob Strauss, who is currently the executive or the director of the Gay Men's Chorus in Buffalo, who has raved about you so many times and just saying that you are the consummate professional, right? And has just sort of said, like, working with you is a dream. I guess, like, you know, if young people were listening or if, you know, people in the arts, and hopefully they're listening to the podcast, why is professionalism so important?
Oh my gosh. It's, thank you for that. And it has been a joy to work with him as well. And honestly, what I think to myself is that when I get a gig, I'm grateful for this opportunity. And it's never only about the work that you do at that particular performance. It's the fact that you build a relationship with people there. You never know, like in a situation like this, when your name might be brought up and what people may say about you. And then that word of mouth can get you work at another opportunity. And that's the gig life. And that's sales in general. And that's business in general. And it's manners. And frankly, I think there's sometimes a reputation that comes around drag and some basic things like being on time and making sure that if you're asked to do additional interviews or different things, you always say yes, and you make it easy for that particular company or nonprofit or business to succeed. And if you do that, you will be asked back.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No, very true. This question, forgive me, I'm interested to know your thoughts about it. And I sort of feel like the way I have it written is a little bit inarticulate. So please bear with me as I ask, like, you know, I think that as a business person, right, you can definitely sort of say like that drag has so much value, right? And in fact, you've dedicated your life to the art of drag, right? What do you think makes drag such a valuable or important art form, and why do we need to protect it?
I think that's a great question. And I think that drag allows an audience member to watch a performer showcase themselves and their individuality and their uniqueness to such an extreme way that they can somehow, in that extreme performance and expression, see our similarities versus our differences. I think sometimes one of the best parts of, say, for instance, Drag Race is Untucked, when you hear the stories of people, their coming out stories or the relationships with their families. And all of a sudden you think, well, I'm not so different than this person. They may decide to express how they want to dress in a certain way, but I've had that difficult time with my mother or my father, or I've had that situation of bullying at school, or my sibling has had that. And wow, we are all quite similar, aren't we? And I think that sometimes we get caught up in trying to understand the differences so much, when really the easiest thing we can do is to make an effort to be kind.
Thank you. That was a beautiful answer. I'm a college professor, and I said to my students that I would be interviewing you, and they were very excited. And they said, Mrs. Kasha Davis is now teaching at a college. Is this correct?
Yes. I'm an adjunct professor with Danny Hoskins at SUNY Brockport. and we are teaching a course on drag, drag theory, culture, and performance. And we're just about halfway through. As a matter of fact, right after this, I'll be slapping on my face and gear, we'll say body, and get myself out to Brockport. We have a bingo this evening. Last night, I was involved with their 22nd annual diversity conference. And it's just been such an honor to be working at the schools. I am a drag queen who's very open and honest about my life experiences. And I have had the fortunate opportunity to work at schools in a way where I can inspire and showcase the art form of drag. When we were preparing for this class, I sat with Danny Hoskins, who's the professor, and I said, okay, so we're gonna do some, you know, theory and the culture and the history here. We've got to work on that. Then all of a sudden we thought to ourselves, what the heck are we thinking we can do here? This is like taking music or theater or any other art form and trying to cram it all into one semester. So we did a nice job. We found a good book. We have great video resources, and we have drag artists coming in for visits and over Zoom as well. And we're able to do some touch points. And of course, we're going to perform and put on a show. And I'll tell you, I think that it's eye-opening, and it's been eye-opening for me, how drag has always been here. Drag kings have always been a part of history, drag history. And frankly, it goes like a roller coaster up and down with regards to its acceptance and things being legal. And this is not necessarily something new. And boy, wouldn't it be wonderful if we can get to a place where people can express themselves and be exactly who they are, and people can just live their lives without so much concern of what others are doing.
Thank you. That's such a beautiful answer. I'm so glad to know that the students, there's going to be some kind of performance at the end of the class. In your opinion, what are the ingredients for an incredible drag show?
A great host to make sure that it doesn't go on and on and on, because every one of us, we've all been to a drag show where there might be about 2 hours too many. And so we keep it, and so that it's nice and tight and held together with a host. And then secondly, I think not seeing all the performances of the basically celebration of Beyonce, for sake of example, right? So when I came onto the scene, some of my favorite music was, you know, Pineapple Princess by Annette Funicello. And the rest of the cast looked at me like, what? And I thought that when I did an Ethel Merman song or an Annette Funicello song, and then sometimes all of a sudden Ariana Grande, because that's what Darian Lake calls me when I do her. But to do this within your character, and it changes up so that the show is not all one thing. It really comes back to my roots of what my grandmother did in vaudeville, or the idea of a variety show. And it makes it that much more interesting for the audience. Sometimes they're learning a new song. Sometimes they're getting a laugh. Sometimes they're seeing a performance that makes them think. But again, not for 3 days.
That's fair enough. No, I mean, I'm thinking, as you were sort of speaking, I was thinking, oh gosh, I would love to see at Rochester Fringe, like a drag 10-in-1 of the old kind of vaudeville shows of like, you could bring back the whistling or things like that. That would be such a hoot. We'll have to wait for that. But I'm interested to know, you're going to be in Buffalo at Salvatore's. What can you tell our listeners? What can they expect?
Oh my gosh. Well, first of all, is there a better place for drag? I mean, Salvatore's, when you drive past Salvatore's and you see all the statues, you think, why isn't one of them in drag? I mean, it's just a fabulous location. And the Belle Amour Ballroom, I mean, come on. I mean, listen, I don't know any drag queen that wouldn't like a little extra ballroom. And that's what the place is. It's extra and it's fun. It's dinner, it's cocktails, it's a show. And of course, my sisters, Aggie Dune, Ambrosia Salad, Darian Lake, and myself, we have been performing together, really. They've been performing together for ages, and I came on and they were my aunties and they all helped me along the way. And now, along with DJ Mr. Davis, my husband, we've been doing our Drag Me to Brunch and our Drag Me to Dinner shows. And again, you're going to see a little bit of everything, a little bit sometimes impersonation. But most importantly, what I love, no matter what people, how people believe politically, where they grew up, their age, if you look across a room of one of our shows, you're going to see people all gathering together to simply have a good time.
Beautiful. My final question, and I hope I can ask this, right? Because I think it's just interesting. I mean, you've had such a kind of varied and nuanced career. And, you know, the title of your documentary, what was it?
Workhorse Queen.
Workhorse Queen, right? Really describes who you are, right? College professor, coming to Salvatore's, working the clubs, working brunches, all of this amazing stuff. What is your hope or vision for yourself for the future?
Well, I have an amazing husband, Mr. Davis, who right from the get-go has been my business partner and, of course, my life partner. And I wouldn't be doing any of this without him. So we have a marvelous time together. We're having a great time doing one-woman shows. We have the brunches, the dinner shows. We just found out that we sold out our brunch at the casino at Seneca. That is sold out. We're looking to add a date. We're looking to add our impersonation shows, our big wig shows, and we're even putting together a cruise. So I just want more people, as was mentioned, to gather together when we have such this divide politically and we have people to such extremes. If drag, this extreme, crazy, clown-like performance, can get people together and say, wow, I have these particular views, but look, these people are great. I had a great time. And maybe when they go back to Thanksgiving dinner and they sit around the table, they might be less judgmental or maybe have something different to say to maybe an aunt or an uncle who is way off base and can say, you know what? I understand where you're coming from, but I've met some of these people and they're simply fantastic. And you know what? Some of them, I don't know. I think they were born fabulous. And ultimately, that's the idea, that we can exist together on this planet for such a short time, truly having a great time.
Thank you so much. Those are my questions, but I always like to end every interview by asking, is there anything that you feel was left unsaid or anything you'd like to share with our listeners?
No, I think the biggest thing that I would like to share is that through these difficult times that we seem to be in, and with the crazy amount of social media that we are all addicted to, just find a way to pause every once in a while and remember that there's always time for kindness.
Thank you. Mrs. Kasha Davis, thank you so much for your time. It was so great to speak with you today.
Thank you so much. This has been a lot of fun.
Thanks. We'll see you at Salvatore's. Take care.
Alrighty.
It was great chatting with Mrs. Kasha Davis, and I really do hope she brings back a vaudeville drag show. If you are interested in seeing her and having a fantastic dinner on Saturday, April 13th at 6 p.m., visit salvatoresexperiences.com. This episode was produced by Jessica Marinelli. Addison Schoonmaker engineered this episode. In addition to this podcast, you can check out our local event guides, posted bi-monthly on buffalorising.com. Make sure you subscribe to the show. If you like this show, please recommend it to a friend. Thanks for listening to Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studios.